From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, you can call us right now at 1-800-462-7413. As always, along with your calls, some topics to talk over, Zorba.
Yes, we're going to talk about a very controversial topic of whether or not you can take a drug, a medication, that will help you end your life. We had lots of feedback on that, and we'll discuss that. The other thing we're going to talk about is Alzheimer's disease, a new test in the future, but good scientific evidence now that may help predict whether or not you get Alzheimer's disease, and we'll talk about whether or not you would take the test.
Mm-hmm. And a recipe?
Stoplight salad. It's a simple dish. Sometimes keep it simple is the best thing to do. Delicious, wonderful, something you could make tonight for dinner.
And we'll find out why it's called stoplight salad.
I hope so, Tom.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And Zorba, let's get to the phones. We welcome a listener now in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Well, I had a burning question about supplements for exercise. Mm-hmm. I'm always a healthy eater and exerciser, but they've got these things called cheat pills. They say you can eat them a half an hour before a meal and enjoy that weekend pizza and a couple beers and not have it set you back a day or two in your calorie take, and I was curious on what Dr. Zorba had to say about those pills, if they're effective or if they're a complete waste of money.
Well, you know, this kind of pills have been out for years and years, you know, by many different names. Wouldn't that be wonderful if you could take a pill, eat all you want to eat, not gain a pound from eating lots of calories, and it would
Well, you can, because he's got these pills. cheap pills.
That's right. I don't have the pills, so I'm not going to be able to... I'm not going to be able to do it. Basically, they are a complete waste of money. They don't do it at all. There's no way that you can block your body. Well, first of all, if you blocked your body from all the food, you would end up having diarrhea. I mean, if you actually blocked it, because you'd have all these juices going through your body, you wouldn't be digesting food. It would actually make you sick. But there's nothing that actually blocks the effects of alcohol. Like you said, if you sit down, you have a few drinks over the weekend, and you eat too much in terms of food and pizza, those calories eventually kind of pork on. But now getting back to the issue really of weight, how's your diet during the weekday?
Oh, fantastic. Raw foods, you know, lean meats, exercise 5-6 days a week.
Okay, so in other words, the work that you do actually, the exercise that you do and eating the right way, I think, you know, is really the way to go. And I believe in moderation, you know, and in all things, you know, I think moderation is very
good.
With
that diet, he could eat that pizza. He wouldn't need those
cheat
pills.
Eat that pizza, but maybe he's talking about eating 2 or 3 pizzas on the weekend. Now, that would be a little too much. But Tom is right. You could eat that pizza, and the cheat pills are cheating you out of money.
Are they cheap? How much do these things cost?
They're not cheap. I mean, the Herbalife ones are about $60-$70 a bottle, you know, and maybe 30-60 pills, they say 1 or 2. I mean, if you can take up to 6 times a day, you got to think that there's nothing in there that's really working.
They don't work. Basically, what you're doing is I'll tell you what weight you're losing. You're losing the weight of the money in your wallet. So I would stop using them completely. They don't do any good at all. So
awesome.
Thanks a lot. You keep up the good work.
Thank you very much for the answer.
You're welcome.
We appreciate the call at 1-800-462-7413.
You know, we're always looking for the easy way to take off weight. We're always looking for the easy way not to exercise. I recently read a book that said you only need 4 minutes a day, 5 days a week in order to keep yourself fit. And I looked at that book and I thought to myself, because I happened to be in a bookstore. Remember bookstores? You'd walk in and...
Wait a minute. Oh, yeah, I remember
those. There'd be piles of books there. Yeah. I happened to find myself in a bookstore in Washington, D.C. I looked at the cover of the book and I thought, I don't have to exercise more than like a half an hour for the entire week and I can stay fit. Why wouldn't I buy the book if that would give me the secret?
I wonder what they say you should do for 4 minutes.
You know what? It wasn't worth the $24.95 for me to find out.
800-462-7 8413. And now, Zorba, we welcome a listener in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Oh, hello. I'm a 74-year-old woman. And in the last 6 or 8 years, I've developed a severe allergy to scallops. And I've signed up for a pilgrimage to Portugal, Spain, and France. And this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing for me. I know that in Portugal and Spain, they eat a lot of fish stews and seafood. And I'm wondering if I can imbibe without worry, especially do I have to worry about being allergic to other mollusks, like oysters, clams, mussels, and so on. I don't think I'm not allergic to fish, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you an interesting scallop story. So here it is. Penny and I were just married. We're in our kitchen with our really good friends, Dan and Kay, and I decide that I'm going to make a wonderful scallop dish, just a delicious scallop dish. And I'm really interested in seafood, so I'm making a seafood dish and throwing a few scallops in there. And we're sitting at dinner with our friends, and I'm looking at Kay, and Kay really said, I really like this dish with scallops. And her face turns red, and I really, really like it. And eventually her face turns red, and she's a thin person, and her face starts to puff up. I shouldn't be laughing. Her face starts
so far, this isn't a funny story.
No. And then she starts sweating, and we all look at her, and we go, then she starts itching, and then we said, Kay, what's wrong? And she said, I don't know. And then she had troubles kind of talking. Anyway, we realized that she realized for the first time she was allergic to scallops. So we gave her some Benadryl. She didn't need adrenaline, but she stays away from scallops. And the interesting thing is about scallops and mollusks, but scallops in particular, you can be allergic to scallops and not allergic to any other seafood at all. Like you said, you're not allergic to fish. It's very common if you're allergic to scallops, you may not be allergic to fish. You're probably not going to be allergic to shrimp. But the reality is there is no – if you're allergic to scallops, there's no safe way to eat scallops. And so when you're in Portugal and when you're in Spain, you're going to have to know the Spanish word for scallops. That's what you're going to have to do. What sort of a reaction did you have?
Violently sick. Mm-hmm. I thought at first that I had food poisoning, but after I had eaten scallops a couple more times, I realized what it was.
That it was the scallops. I would recommend, do you have an EpiPen that you have with you? Something called an
EpiPen?
It's called an EpiPen. It's a pen of adrenaline. It's an adrenaline shot.
Oh, no, I don't.
I highly recommend when you travel on your pilgrimage, call up your doctor and say, I need to have an adrenaline shot because I'm allergic for scallops. In case all of a sudden you develop a severe allergic reaction, this can reverse it right away and save your life. And I'm serious. If you've got that and you're going to be traveling around there and you're going to have seafood stews that may or may not have some scallops in it, your goal is not to have it. You need to have an EpiPen. That's what it's called. We'll put a picture of that on our website, zorbapastor.org. But you need an EpiPen. You need to have some Benadryl with you. Benadryl is a great drug to take. And then what I would do is I would write it in Spanish and Portuguese and know how to pronounce it and ask them. And basically, if it's a seafood stew, if they go, it may have scallops, may is the word you're looking for, and just, you know, stay away from it.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for taking my call and for the answer.
Oh, you're most welcome. And you have a great time on your pilgrimage.
We appreciate the call. 800-462-7413. And before we get back to the phone, Zorba, we've been getting a lot of emails in response to your recent remarks on assisted suicide. We're going to look at two emails from listeners with very differing views on the matter. The first comes from a longtime listener, Mary, who writes, Dear Zorba, I have been a hospice chaplain for 5 years and was very concerned when you shared your view that it's okay for people with non-curable conditions like cancer to commit suicide. As a hospice chaplain, I advise my clients that we don't need to create suffering, but if there is no way to relieve their suffering and they must live with it, then they can bring meaning to their suffering by offering it back so that something good will come out of it. Now, a different perspective, this one from Terry in Baraboo, Wisconsin. Dear Zorba, recently you talked about end of life for cancer patients and indicated that where death is imminent, you would be accepting of someone taking a pill and ending life to avoid needless pain and suffering while the body deteriorates. I have a different situation. I will probably get Alzheimer's. My mother had it for 8 years, and her siblings had it. Even though she was alive, I would not like to live in that state. I have told my daughters to take me to a state where I can end my life when I get to the point where I no longer recognize them. It seems senseless to me that we as a nation spend so much in the last weeks and months of life to gain what are sometimes only days in agony and pain. Quality of life is everything. What are your views?
Well, first of all, they're two very, very different letters, like you said. And I think these are society views. These are moral, ethical issues, society views. So first of all, right off the bat, this is my independent view.
Both these cases are quite well
stated. Oh, they're very, very well stated. Very, very well stated. And the fact is, although this is medical, there's no doubt about it that it's medical. It's more humanitarian, art of medicine medical versus you should take this pill because it's going to cure you of pneumonia. So I want to address sort of the second one first, the Alzheimer's. Well, my mom had Alzheimer's, and you know, I'm concerned that I'll have Alzheimer's. That I find a slippery slope. You know, the concept of, well, I don't recognize you, so you should end my life. To me, that's a slope that I find very slippery. I wouldn't go anywhere near that slope as a physician. If I had somebody who had a memory loss, I don't really know, like with my mom, when my mom had Alzheimer's, I don't really know what she was experiencing. She couldn't talk to me. Mm-hmm. She couldn't answer my questions. On the other hand, she didn't look to me like she was suffering and unhappy. I have no idea what was going on in her mind. I would never touch that, never in a million years. Mm-hmm. Now, the issue of being able to end your life, it's my thought that I can go and get a gun and I can shoot my head and kill myself with a gun, which is very uncomfortable, awful, awful for the living and awful for others. When you look at the death with dignity bills that have gone through, you look at the states where they have happened. Mm-hmm. If you look at Holland, where it is, if you look at Belgium, most people, somewhere in the range of 90 to 95%, never use the pills that they actually get. Most of them just have them on the shelf in case they need them. That's the most interesting thing. And that's why that chaplain has a very interesting point, because most people want to have that ability if they want to end their life when they get the pills, but they don't actually use them.
Yeah, well, now let's talk about the hospice worker's point.
Well, it's an interesting point. I think that's a viewable point. But there's some people who are in agony and they can't turn their agony into anything because they're suffering with intractable pain. You know, when you're, and I've seen patients who have intractable pain, when you're moving around, you can't get comfortable. It's end of life. I had a good friend of mine whose husband ended up having a cancer that spread to his spinal cord. And for the last 12 weeks of his life, he was in agony. He was yelling. He was screaming. At that time, they didn't have morphine pumps. How can you turn that into something good? Well, I certainly couldn't. So I think I should have the right, if I were in agony and I have a terminal disease, I can get a gun. I think I should have the right to have pills. But these are moral, ethical issues where you have two people on both sides of the camp, and I respect both sides.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, we move to Palm Coast, Florida, with our next caller. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
So for the last about year to year and a half, I've sort of had a sort of stomach pain, but it's not a very sharp pain. It's just more of a kind of a knot, and it's not really going away. And I thought it was a hernia at first because when I pushed down in a certain spot, it kind of feels like a bulge. But I've had blood work done and ultrasound done. I've seen a GI specialist, and they can't really figure out what it is. They don't think it's a hernia. And the next step they want to take is to do an endoscopy. But before I want to do that, I kind of started changing my diet up a little bit, and I noticed that after not eating oatmeal that it kind of started to get better, but it's still not going away. So I wanted to kind of get your feedback on that.
Oh, sure. How much does it bother you? How uncomfortable is it?
On a scale of 1 to 10, I'd say it's around a 2 or 3, but it's always there nonstop, especially when I'm sitting down.
How long has it gone on for?
About a year and 3-4 months.
Oh, okay. So it's gone on for quite some time. So the CT scan didn't show much. Didn't show anything. Didn't show much is our medical phrase for didn't show anything. Yeah. But we don't say that often. We often say didn't show much because we got something that came from it. Well, an endoscopy, looking down in your stomach, is going to give you some sort of an answer. Possibly. Once again, it's another way of looking at the gut from the inside of the gut to see if there's anything there. You know, for all the docs, it's really a function of how bothersome is it. A year and a half is year and a quarter. Year and a half, it's a long time. So oatmeal, how much oatmeal do you normally eat?
Usually just a bowl in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I always, when I wake up, I usually drink, the first thing I drink is a half glass of lime water. So just because I was kind of weary of just being put to sleep and doing a procedure of that nature, I kind of wanted to try and, exhaust all possible options.
Mm-hmm. I think that's reasonable. I think looking and seeing if there's any food that really is causing this problem, I think it's a very reasonable way to look at it. But like you said, in this particular case, it seems to be improved, but it hasn't gone away.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
So I think what you're doing makes a lot of sense, but I think you don't have an answer to what you have. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't know why oatmeal would necessarily cause this discomfort, especially if you're not eating it 3 times a day. If you're only eating it once a day. What do you do for a living?
I work at a financial services firm, so I'm pretty much sitting a lot.
Uh-huh. Do you think it's due to sitting? Do you think it's in your chair? Do you think you need to? Does it bother you on the weekend when you're not sitting in front of your screen?
No, usually the only time it really doesn't bother me is when I'm at the gym or I'm walking around or laying down. Uh-huh. But usually when I'm sitting, I feel it.
Mm-hmm. And you sit a lot all day. How about in the evening when you're sitting in a different chair?
Same thing, really.
Okay. I think I'd have a look at it. What I was trying to figure out is if there's some position that seems to be causing this, but it just seems to be the static position of sitting seems to do it. If it were me, I would have the gastroscope. That's what I would do. I would try to find out what it was. That would make some sense to me. Okay. But you can always wait a bit, but it sounds to me like you need a scope to try to get to the bottom of it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You are most welcome.
We appreciate that call at 800-462-7413.
You know, one of the things he worries about, of course, is the sedation. But with scopes, we use something called conscious sedation, where you're sort of with it. And you're awake, but you're sort of partially awake and you don't have any memory of it. And conscious sedation can be very comforting because, among other things, you don't have the side effects of severe sedation. And basically, you come out of it very quickly.
What do you use for that?
Well, there are a number of drugs that are used for it that basically are drugs that are very similar to Valium, if you would. They're not Valium at all. There's a drug called Versed, which is a drug that's used, and it basically reduces it. Propofol, which was the drug that Michael Jackson used to kill himself, is actually an incredibly good drug. You sort of have to be licensed. You have to have certain qualifications to do it, but you go to sleep right away and you wake up right away.
Yeah. A bunch of years ago, 34 maybe, mm-hmm. I was skating with my girlfriend, soon to be my wife, showing off and skating backwards.
Oh,
one
backwards.
Foot went under me. I fell and broke my leg in two places.
God.
And
she married you.
Yeah, even with that. But anyway, I went to the doc, and he gave me, I think, Valium.
Yeah.
I was sitting there watching
him
while he twisted my bones
in
the place
days,
of my leg.
Days, that was Valium. That was Valium that they gave you, right. He was twisting the bones, and you remember that right now. That's right. We can do a lot. We can do a lot when you're under. But then you woke up right away. That was it. Yeah, it was Valium. So.
Yeah. Okay. Before the break, Zorba, let's log into the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and take a quick question from a longtime Wisconsin listener. She asks, "Dear Zorba, I have a rather unusual question. For the past several years, whenever my husband and I are going to have sex, he will start to sneeze. Not constantly, but like anywhere from 3 to 8 times, roughly 30 seconds to a minute apart. It doesn't matter if we're at home in our own bed or at a hotel. Can't say it's any perfume I wear because sometimes I'm right out of the shower. We've tried clean sheets, dirty sheets, spring, summer, winter, or fall. I can't say it's when he lays down, because when we go to bed at night, he doesn't sneeze. There really is no rhyme or reason to it all. Just curious if you can help solve the mystery behind his sneezing.
I could see that. That could be a little bit disconcerting. Like, honey, I really want to have sex with you. Achoo. And then you sneeze. Yeah.
Give me a minute. Achoo. That's give right. me another minute. Achoo. Forget it. I'm not in the mood laughing. Anymore.
That's right. Well, there is erectile tissue in the nose.
Oh.
So when he's sneezing, it's probably because he is stimulated and excited, and the erectile tissue in the nose is then doing that. Now, why Mother Nature put erectile tissue in the nose, I have no idea. No idea. But she does things that are quirky, you know, sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's it. Yeah,
well, you
solved
the question.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. If they don't have, there's no way to basically that I can think of, and I've had patients who have been bothered with this, but they're bothered with it because they said every time I want to have sex, my nose gets really stuffy and I find it uncomfortable. And I've never found anything that works for it. We might have a listener who might come up with a folk remedy for this guy. Who knows?
Are you curious about something? Zorba really knows his stuff? Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
A recipe coming up next. Lots more of your calls, some interesting research to talk about, our medical myth buster. The list goes on. Lots of reasons for you to stay with us here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. But before our next call, recipe time, this one, Zorba, for stoplight salad, whatever that means.
Well, stoplight, we call it stoplight salad because we've got something red in there, we've got something yellow in there, and we have something green in there.
Oh.
Stoplight salad.
Got it.
And sometimes you're looking for something that is delicious and simple. I mean, I like to do complex recipes, but also sometimes I like simple recipes that are novel, that are unique. I think humans always like something that's different, right?
Yep.
Except, and do you tend to eat the same thing every day?
I'm branching out a little bit.
Meaning what?
Meaning I'm going from hamburgers to subs.
To subs, that's the branch out. I just want to know the level of that. From hamburgers to subs. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's okay. That's the, well, you know, you take what you can get, right?
That's
you
it.
Take
that's
what
right.
you can
yeah.
get. Okay. So we start out with two red apples cored and chopped into bite-sized pieces.
Mm-hmm. Two red apples cored and chopped into bite-sized pieces.
So you know what the next question is about apples, right? Now, what apple do you like, Tom?
Oh, why am I going to go through that again? I'm not going to say Red Delicious because you'll argue with me and then 10,000 people will clog up our email for saying what a dope I am. So I like a variety of apples. Okay.
Well, I would use a Honeycrisp. They are my favorite apple. Do you eat Honeycrisp at all?
I don't know. I guess maybe.
You, I don't know. I guess maybe you gave three
answers.
Why just
get apples? I'm not paying any attention to what the name is.
Well, they're very sweet, very good apple.
Okay.
Developed by our sister state, Minnesota, in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
3 cups of chopped broccoli, chopped into bite-sized pieces.
3 cups of chopped broccoli, chopped into bite-sized pieces.
So we've red. And we have green.
Green so right. far. Mm-hmm.
Don't use yellow broccoli. Use green broccoli.
Right.
Yeah, because it's yellow.
Right. Okay.
3 medium bananas.
3 medium bananas.
So that's our yellow. Then we have 1/2 cup of walnuts.
1/2 cup of walnuts.
1/2 cup of raisins.
1/2 cup of raisins.
8 ounces of light vanilla yogurt.
8 ounces of light
vanilla yogurt.
Half teaspoon of cinnamon.
And a teaspoon.
Half teaspoon.
Mm-hmm. I'm puzzled because bananas, when you peel them, are not yellow.
What color are they?
The stuff you eat is not yellow. It's white.
Well, it's, I think of it as.
Banana, I mean, a yellow thing would be like a green, like a yellow pepper.
Well, I think.
This is a banana.
I think bananas have a yellow tinge to them. I don't think they're.
The part you eat?
Yeah, don't
no,
you?
No, it's not yellow. It's white.
You think it's white?
This is not stoplight salad.
Wait a second. Time out. Right. 1 minute. Let's get back to the banana issue. You think it's just white? I think of it as sort of white with a sort of a yellow color to it. You mean I've been
I'm
wrong?
I'm going to bring in a banana.
Okay.
And we'll peel it.
Okay.
And you'll see that there's no yellow in the part that you actually eat.
Well, you know, you bring in that banana. And we'll just see. We'll just see if you're right. Now, are you colorblind?
No.
Okay.
Are you?
No, I am not colorblind. Absolutely not colorblind.
Anyway.
I know my colors. Will you get on the color chart?
Let's put this red and green salad together.
It is not. The banana is yellow. The banana is yellow. Okay, but if you want to use a yellow pepper, you go right ahead and use it.
Yeah,
you could add a yellow pepper and then it would be stoplight.
Okay.
But even without it, I contend that bananas are yellow and not white. And I bet there are a few listeners who will contend on my side.
Right.
Here they will be on my side.
Okay.
I promise you, if we hold a survey, I will win and you will lose. Okay, what do we do with all this? Mix it all together and store it in the refrigerator. That's it.
Moving right along.
That's it. If you want a copy of today's stoplight salad, not the red and green salad, but the stoplight salad, go to ZorbaPastor.org. And there you can see pictures of me, pictures of Tom, all the recipes that we've done. We've got a great archive. That is ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, we are all over Facebook. And I tweet, not every day by any means, but on an occasion.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in St. Augustine, Florida. Hi.
Hi there.
What's up?
I wanted to just pick his brain because I've been to the doctor and I'm just not sure what to do. I had originally went because I had right in front of my ear, I have a swelling, and I didn't really notice it. It doesn't hurt, so I didn't notice it. But when I did, I went to the doctor, and she thinks it's my salivary duct.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So anyway, she did prescribe a Mox Clave. I've done my prescription and stuff. I still have it.
Okay, so she prescribed an antibiotic for it.
Yes. So I just didn't know. You know, she suggested, you know, lemon drops, so you can only eat so many lemon drops. So I was hoping that you might have some other ideas. I guess I am going to have to go back and see her because I do, it's still here.
Well, there are a couple of issues. So, first of all, lemon drops, the parotid gland, you know, is right around there. So when you had peritonitis, which is an infection of the parotid gland, mumps, for instance, that would swell up tremendously. And the idea behind lemon drops is that it will actually stimulate the parotid gland to put out secretions. But the question is, what does this do to? Is it due to a stone? Stone is a common issue with the parotid gland. Did it decrease in size at all with the antibiotic?
I didn't notice that any decrease at all.
Okay, so the chances of infection are really pretty far off. So what you need, it's very important that you get imaging of that where a radiologist will actually, there's a duct that goes from the parotid gland into the mouth because it produces a salivary gland, and they actually will shoot some dye into that duct to see what's going on in the gland itself, to see if it's if there's something that's growing there, seeing whether or not there's a stone. And that's what you need. You need to have an evaluation. A physical evaluation is not going to do much at all. What I think I would do is I'd call your doctor up rather than go back, and I'd say it's not any better at all. And you can even tell your doctor you heard it on the show. You need to have radiological imaging. And what you do is you call the radiologist and say, what should I do with this? Because sometimes they'll do something called an ultrasound or a CT scan of that area. But commonly they'll go in and shoot some dye in there. But that's what you need. You don't need another doctor visit at this moment. You need to have a doctor evaluation because they've already seen them. And then if your doctor says, I'm not sure what to do, then you need to see an ENT doc. But you need imaging to find out what's going on. How long has it gone on for?
I just finished the meds last week, and so it's been about 3 weeks now.
It's 3 weeks for the swelling. Has it gotten bigger? It hasn't gotten smaller. Has it gotten bigger at all?
Yeah. You know, I haven't really noticed it bigger, but it's noticeable for sure.
Do other people notice it? Is it big enough so people say, what's that swelling?
No, I noticed.
You notice it. Well, you know, the other option is if it's a viral infection, and viruses do affect it, mumps happens to be one of the viruses. One option is to say, okay, I took the antibiotics, and you could wait 3 or 4 weeks. I don't think there's any rush if it's not growing. And you could just wait 1 month and see what happens. But then if it doesn't get any smaller, then I would check on it. Because if it's viral, it should go down. So if you called me up in my office and said it wasn't any better and it wasn't growing, I'd probably wait 3 to 4 weeks. I wouldn't rush into it because I wouldn't rush into testing. But if it got bigger, I'd say call me sooner and I'd wait and see if it settles down with that. Warm, moist compresses to the area, if it is an infection, 2 to 3 times a day for 5 to 10 minutes, just a washcloth. You sit there, you know, look at the computer and put a warm washcloth over that. Sometimes we'll improve the circulation and then improve things. Okay.
Awesome. I appreciate all the suggestions.
You're welcome. Thanks.
That I don't have to go back.
Yes. Especially that you don't have to go back. There you are.
I know. I'll just give her a call in a few weeks. I appreciate it very much.
You're welcome. Take care now.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the call. 800-462-7413, toll-free, to a Cloquet, Minnesota listener now. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have upper back problems that I've been seeing a chiropractor for quite a few years. And
okay.
Then last summer, I developed lower back issues, which I actually didn't realize they stemmed from my back because I was getting leg pain all the way down from the top of my hip all the way down to the middle of my calf.
Right, and that can easily be from a disc. The L4, L5 disc can cause pain in the foot and the calf. And that's commonly a reason that people actually get surgery. They get surgery not for pain in their back, but surgery for pain in their leg that's intractable. And that's usually disc-type problems. Sometimes it's sciatica, too. So how can I help you?
So because I had already been going to the chiropractor, mm-hmm. I kept going to the chiropractor.
Sure, sure. They can do a really good job of alleviating stress on that disc. They can do a very good job of rehabilitating your back. There are a lot of good chiropractors that do good work.
So between going to the chiropractor and I started a Tai Chi DVD, and my gym has a trainer, so mm-hmm. I asked him for tips. Mm-hmm. And it has gotten much better. I was at the point where I could hardly get out of bed and things. But if I don't do my exercises for even like 1 day, mm-hmm. then I'm really, really sore. Uh-huh. And so my question, I guess, is it worth my while to go and get like an X-ray or an MRI?
Let me ask you a question. If I said to you, you need back surgery, what would you say? Well, then there's no reason. That's it. You answered the question. And that was right away. The answer was nope. There's no reason to get an X-ray or an MRI if you're not going to take action on it. I wouldn't do it. And my answer would be the same as yours. Now, do you take naproxen at all or ibuprofen?
Ibuprofen some.
Yeah, well, on the day, how much is some?
You know, like maybe a couple times a week. It's hard on my stomach.
Yeah. Well, what I would do is there are a couple things. On the days you don't exercise where you may have pain, you could try 2 naproxen, which are over-the-counter Aleve, 2 in the morning, 2 in the evening. They might work. And if that doesn't work, go down 1 in the morning or 1 in the evening. And if you still get stomach pain, take arthritis-strength Tylenol. They're 350-milligram tablets, or rather 625-milligram tablets, and try 1 3 times a day when your back bothers you.
Okay.
Not every day. But I would continue doing the exercise. How long has this been going on for now?
I didn't go in for it right away, but probably like 8 months.
Okay, sometimes things take a year or two to get better. What's your weight? Are you overweight or at a good weight?
I'm at a pretty good weight.
Okay, so it means exercise is the answer. And Mother Nature says, I need you to help my back. That's what it's telling you. Stick with it. Stay away from the surgeon. Stay away from the X-ray because the X-ray may lead you to the surgeon. Keep up with the chiropractor.
All right. Thank you.
You're most welcome.
Thanks so much. We appreciate the call. And before the break, Zorba, let's log into the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and take a quick question from a longtime listener in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. She asks, Dear Zorba, you don't hear much about the condition called Dupuytren's contracture. Are you aware of any healthy ways to treat this condition? I love your show. I've been a listener for years, and I especially love your laugh.
That's very nice.
Did I say that right? Dupuytren's?
Yes. Yeah, well, you said it's close to right. Are you French?
No.
Well, this
actually, I have French.
Yeah, you have French blood.
Yeah.
French blood in there. Yeah. Do you speak French?
No.
No, were you just about to say
but
that?
But I live with someone who does a little bit.
Yes, you live with somebody who's been. Well, Dupuytren's contracture, I mean, it's French. And what it basically is, it's a shortening of the tendon that can occur. It often occurs in the fourth finger and the fifth finger. It's a scarring that goes on. Some people are prone to it. Some people are not. The initial treatments are physical therapy to try to get that tendon to straighten and strengthen out. And so that's one thing that you can do with Dupuytren's contracture. But for some people, they need to have surgery. We don't like to do surgery unless you really need it and you can get it to straighten it out with PT. But if not, the surgery can be very effective in the right hands with a hand surgeon who does lots of these. That's what it is. So it's a contracture of the tendon that affects the fingers, often the third and fourth finger, sometimes the fifth finger of the hand.
If you have a question for the good doc, just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Some interesting research to talk over. That's coming up next. More of your calls, of course, our medical myth buster too, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number again, 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, this sounds really interesting, maybe exciting. A blood test which can predict Alzheimer's disease.
Well, it's a blood test which may predict Alzheimer's disease. This is the first study, good study, well-controlled, where they took a number of people who were older Americans, older senior citizens. Some of them had some cognitive difficulty at the beginning of the study. Most of them did not. What they did was, over time, they measured them over a five-year period, and they measured a different blood test. They're called blood lipid tests. Lipids are cholesterol and sort of variations of cholesterol, to try to find out whether one of these would predict dementia, in other words, cognitive loss. And lo and behold, with about 90% predictability, which is really great if this test is repeated, they could take a test and predict in 5 years who was beginning to have cognitive difficulty and who was not.
Whoa.
That's exactly it. It's wild. We don't have a good way of diagnosing Alzheimer's disease. There's some spinal tap, expensive, painful, that you can do that may help diagnose it, but not predict it. We've got PET scans that, once again, may help us with the diagnosis, but once again, it does not actually predict it. If this is a predictability test and it turns out to be true, then this is a game changer.
Well, it shouldn't be that hard to redo this and find out.
Well, it takes a while. It takes a bunch of years because you've got to watch people. In other words, you've got to take it and then see if they develop it. And this is, this was not a huge, what we call cohort. But this may be developed as a test where you can take. Now, I have a question for you.
I was going to ask you the same question.
Ah.
Would you want to take it?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah. That's always kind of like when you say that's a good question, it's like marching time. Yeah. But my mom had Alzheimer's disease, and And I don't know if I would take the test.
Yeah, I don't know.
In other words, because first of all, it may be 90% predictive, right? We won't know for a while.
Yeah.
Well, then you might think, I'm going to have Alzheimer's disease, and you worry about it. You don't do the things you're going to do, and it may be only right 90% of the time. Well, it's wrong 10% of the time. So it's a lot of other, like a lot of other genetic testing where you really have to decide, do you want to have that information or not?
Yeah. But you want it to be there, so you have that choice.
Well, I definitely want it to be there. I wouldn't say stop the clock,
yeah.
You know, stop the presses, don't do this testing at all. But the real issue is also if these are lipid tests that predict Alzheimer's disease, the question is then, can we alter the lipids in the test and therefore abrogate Alzheimer's disease? And that's kind of where the research is going to go. We don't know a lot about dementia and what causes it, but maybe this particular test is going to lead us on a clue for a cure.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. 800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba. A listener with us in Bryan, Texas. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Dr. Zorba. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Okay. I was wondering what you could recommend to reduce the appearance of blemishes and dark spots on people of color who tend to scar very easily that does not involve a hydroquinone product.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And the reason I ask is I've read a few things that say hydroquinone could possibly be a carcinogen,
mm-hmm.
but dermatologists always refer me to that. So,
right, right. And hydroquinone is a medication that we often use to get rid of scars on people with dark skin who have problems. First of all, have you noticed any difference in sun when you're in the sun at all? You know, does it get worse when it's in the sun?
In general, I suppose so. Mm-hmm. I normally wear sunblock or
that's the most important. That's number one. Number one is keeping the sun away from your skin is of primo importance because that will make a difference ultimately in how your skin actually ages, how your skin actually looks, how your skin actually responds to injury and so on. Keeping the sun away from it is important. And I always tell people, you can look at the bottom side of your arm to see what your arm would look like if it didn't get sun. And you can also look where the sun don't shine. As my daughter once told me when I was saying your butt, and she said, that's where the sun don't shine. But like you say, there are no good medications for this. There's nothing good other than that. Have you been using the medication from the dermatologist?
Well, I did purchase a hydroquinone, and they just suggested for me to get one over the counter.
Mm-hmm.
You can get it easy enough at, Walmart.
Uh-huh.
I didn't really stick with it because I was concerned about some of the literature I read mm-hmm. that said it's banned in some European countries, so I thought I would just take a slower approach and letting my skin kind of heal itself. And I also, I use this Even Clear that
mm-hmm.
Clinique has. Mm-hmm. And
how does that work?
Kind of see how that goes. Well, on blemishes on my face, it's worked pretty well in the past, but I have some other blemishes that I might be tougher. So I'm not sure.
Well, you may look at a variety. In other words, what you may want to do is use EvenClear, the Clinique product, on your face, and that's really the most important issue. And then you may want to use the hydroquinone on some of the areas of the skin where you have more problems, therefore reducing the amount of hydroquinone that you're using. It's really not – I don't look at it as a black and white issue, but it may be a dose response issue if you're concerned about the side effects. Using less of it, less often in certain spots, and therefore you've got sort of the bigger gun in one spot and the Clinique in the other spot. That's kind of what I would do.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for listening.
We appreciate the call. Thanks. And time now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. Today's myth comes to us from Patricia in Buffalo, New York. She writes, Dear Dr. Zorba, I rarely consume soft drinks because I know that most have more sugar than I should eat in a day. I also know that research shows that diet sodas may actually increase weight gain, perhaps because they trick the body's metabolic systems. For the occasional soft drink, in case of emergencies, which is the lesser?
In case of emergency. I have a soft drink emergency. I've got a Pepsi emergency. I've got to go and get my Pepsi. I'm sitting here thinking, what could be a possible soft drink emergency? Well, if you're having a hypoglycemic attack, right? Low blood sugar and you have insulin and you want to keep the person from going into insulin shock, don't use a diet soft drink. Give real Coke.
Yeah, but just for, you know, when you want to have a soft drink.
That's an emergency. That's
Which one should you do, diet or
do you,
sugar?
Do you drink a lot of soft drinks?
That's some, yeah.
What do you drink?
I don't know. I'm a variety. Who cares?
I care. I'm your friend. I care about the soft drinks. I want you to be happy.
Some things are very private.
You know, we've been doing this for 55 years, and I don't know what your soft drink of choice is.
I try to keep it from you. Diet or regular?
This is too much.
What should we do?
Too much. Well, first of all, diet drinks have not been shown to cause people to lose weight.
Right.
The more people drink diet drinks, the bigger they become.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think it's because diet drinks put the weight on. However, some people believe that when you drink a diet drink, you then start to crave calories somewhere else and therefore, end up eating more calories somewhere else. I don't know if that's the case. All I know is that diet drinks don't seem to do anything. And the people who drink diet drinks are overweight. Generally, people who are thinner drink regular drinks.
Yeah, but that's because the overweight people want diet drinks not to be overweight.
And how about the younger people? How about the people who are normal weight?
They don't tend to drink diet.
They don't tend to drink diet in the first place. So a diet drink. So if I haven't given
an
answer.
Where are we going with this?
Well, I'm trying to figure out about the diet. I'm still stuck on the soft drink emergency.
What's the answer? Sugar soda or no sugar soda?
I would stay with the diet drink. That's
good.
Well, because
even though it doesn't do any good.
No, because there's so many calories. You have 20 ounces of Coke. It's like 20 teaspoons of sugar. You're not happy with this answer.
Do you like busting myths? Soda.
Go ahead. You can do it.
Do you like busting myths? Soda we. Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. That's Zorba@WPR.org. I'm going to one day find out what you drink. One day, I'm sure you're going to, at some under duress, release that information.
Some secrets I will never break. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. To the phones, thankfully, we go now. A listener with us in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Okay, I have a bit of a strange medical problem that I'm hoping you guys can help me with. Mm-hmm. For the past year, when I either yawn or swallow or turn my head side to side, I get a very loud roaring noise in my ears. And I wouldn't care if it was just in the day, but the problem is it's waking me up at night.
Mm-hmm. It's gone on for a year, you said.
It's been for a year. I did go to an ENT. I've had some hearing tests done. They don't find any hearing loss. They can't really find a problem.
Mm-hmm. What happens when you blow your nose?
Sometimes there's a little bit of popping.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Allergies?
No allergies.
No allergies. Is your nose stuffy? Are you stuffy?
No, and I have tried nasal saline, and that didn't seem to really help.
Uh-huh. Did you try a nasal steroid spray to reduce the swelling in the back of your nose, if you have it?
I had a sample someone had given me, and the only thing was I felt it gave me headaches, so I didn't stick with it.
Okay.
The time that I did use it, it didn't really help.
Uh-huh. And any Sudafed? Have you taken Sudafed at all over the counter?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, I've got some – I just have some suggestions. First of all, it sounds to me like you may have eustachian tube dysfunction. In other words, the tube between your nose and your ears suddenly changes pressure, makes a pop, and it's uncomfortable. And that is a common thing that often happens. Usually people have a stuffy nose when that happens, but it's just a common thing when that actually happens. So a couple of things you can do for that. First of all, I would recommend you try a steroid spray in the maximal amount. Now, there are probably 6 or 7 different kinds of steroid sprays on the market, most of them generic. You just have to put it in the back of the nose. You don't have to sort of try to suck it in. But you may have been allergic to some of the other ingredients in the steroid spray. So I would try one. 2 puffs in the morning, 2 two puffs in the evening in each nostril. Do it for 2 weeks. See what happens. If that works, then you gradually sort of ease out of it. Instead of two puffs twice a day, take one puff twice a day, and then maybe you take one puff daily. But maximize it at two puffs twice a day. Number two, I would take Sudafed. Over-the-counter Sudafed, 30 milligrams. I take one in the morning. I probably take one in the evening before I went to sleep because that's what bothers you. The Sudafed is for symptomatic relief. It doesn't cure anything like the steroid spray, but it's for symptomatic relief, and I'm a great believer in it. It works well. It's over-the-counter without a prescription. You do have to sign it out from the pharmacist because the drug can be abused. And those are the things I would try with this. I think you've got a eustachian tube problem, and the steroid spray can really help with that.
Great. I'll give it a shot. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for listening.
Thanks. We appreciate the call. And before we head out, Zorba, we don't mind taking our lumps from the grammar police or debating the issues mm-hmm. during our disagreeing with the doc segment. But now and then, it's just nice to hear that we're doing a good job. The following email came to us from Pat and Neil in Lena, Wisconsin. Dear Dr. Zorba, 6 years ago, you said something on your show that saved my husband's life.
Oh.
My husband had a pimple-type sore on his buttock that kept coming back at least 4 times. On your show, you said that if you had a sore that goes away and then comes back, you should get it checked because it was probably cancer. Well, he decided to heed your advice and get it checked. And by that time, it had become a cyst-type annoyance. The doctor removed it, sent it in, and called us to tell us it was Merkel cell carcinoma. He was given a 5-10% chance of surviving past 3 to 6 months.
Right.
He had a procedure done to remove the rest of the cancer and then surgery to remove 4 lymph nodes and finally simultaneous chemo and radiation. Yesterday, we finally got the all-clear signal. Cancer-free, cured. We are so grateful to have heard you make that statement 6 years ago. We just want to say thank you, and please continue to do what you do so well. We are forever grateful.
Oh, how nice. How nice. That is very, very nice. Thank you so much for writing that letter. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Share your story with us. Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or find us through Facebook.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or make a comment on Facebook.
And, of course, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Colburn. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping for your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0322Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.